Welcome to Inside Personal Growth Podcast. Deep dive with us as we unlock the secrets to personal development, empowering you to thrive. Here, growth isn't just a goal, it's a journey. Tune in, transform, and take your life to the next level by listening to just one of our podcasts.
Well, welcome back to Inside Personal Growth. I have what I would consider a very good friend, over, even though we've only met, I think, once or twice in our life, but I feel like he's a second father to me, is Don Green. He's the executive director of the Napoleon Hill Foundation. And Don, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Greg. It's good to be on your show. I know you've got a tremendous following, and as I helped a judge do a book one time. I mean, I edited it, what have you, and got him to put it on Amazon. It was not what we published, and I told him, you got to go to the newspapers, you got to do interviews, you got to go to the Kiwanis, you go to the Lions Club, go to the church, tell people about your book. And, of course, a typical person thinks, I've spent all this time writing a book, they'll line up, buy it. But if they don't know you got the book, they're not going to buy it. Amazon, the last check, they got over 8 million books. And if Don and Greg sits down and does a book, and we're the only one who knows it, the only copies are going to get bought is the one we buy.
But, well, I love that. I mean, what you're saying is if you don't promote your book, it's never going to get out there. Now, we've got two books here. One is called The Millionaire Mindset with Don Green. And the other one, which struck my fancy, was Achieving Your Goals. We're still at the first part of the year, and people out there are still always wrestling with goals. And goal setting and achieving is always something that people can do. And so we're going to put links to both of these books. But I'm going to tell them, some of my listeners, a bit about you, Don, because not everybody knows you. He's the executive director and CEO of Napoleon Hill Foundation. He leverages his extensive experience in personal investment and banking industry to share his secrets as to why some individuals succeed financially and others remain in debt, live paycheck to paycheck, or fail to build enough wealth to live comfortably in retirement. Don tells lots of great stories. He's been with Napoleon Hill Foundation now for how many years, Don?
24.
34 years. So you couldn't have a better person. And he's co-authored, or I should say, I just had Greg Reed on here on The Secrets of Happiness. He did a book with many of the authors that Sharon Leitner, Greg Reed, and the list goes on, who Don has actually co-authored with, or actually they co-authored with Napoleon Hill Foundation, I should say. Go to the website. We're going to put a link to the website, to the Napoleon Hill Foundation website. There you can learn more about the books. You can learn more about the courses. You can learn more about everything. It's a great website, and I really appreciate you taking the time to be on. Let's talk about goals. Could you share with us why Napoleon Hill's teachings continue to resonate with audiences around the world, even decades after they were first introduced? Because here we are in 2024, and Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich goes back to, what year was it that it was actually published first time?
1937.
So here we are, 1937 to 2024, and it still resonates with people, and it still is one of the best sellers at Amazon. Tell us why you think his teachings have continued to sustain the test of time, and especially around definite of purpose and achieving one's goals.
Well, I think he just hit on it. He was bothered by growing up. Why are some people rich and others not? Of course, at the time that he was doing the books, Think and Grow Rich and Law of Success, was inner depression so forth. But I think he discovered, now there's other people before him, like Orson Swett Marden, 1859, wrote a book, Self-Help Psychology. I think it's the first self-help book. And he read it. Orson Swett Marden read it. a lot of other people. The guy's name was Samuel Smiles, British. But he interviewed people, and I can remember some of them. He interviewed basically people that stuck with him a long time. But he didn't do the interviews. He wrote stories. But he went out and visited those people one-on-one and basically asked them what they did. Of course, some of them did it without thinking. Some of them may have sending it more. But he noticed certain traits that they seemed to run. And I say the principles are kind of like gravity. If you visit your grandpa over the weekend, you're about 40 or 50 feet up in the air, you decide you want to jump off, you might get hurt. It's called gravity.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say this because I was on, now Vern Harnish hasn't been on here, but he talked about the Rockefeller habits. Now, Napoleon Hill interviewed Rockefeller, right? Yep. And I have the book here, actually, and this, I'm going to show it to Mastering the Rockefeller Habits. It's by Vern Harnish. It's not by, what I'm going to say, by Rockefeller. But, you know, Napoleon Hill was great at synthesizing what others knew into his work. And that was the key to it. And in this Achieving Your Goals guide, he discussed four proven principles of success. What I'd like you to do, if you could, to give our audience a brief overview of the principles and why they're so crucial to goal achievement.
Well, that's just some studying is what separates people. And one of them is, the first one is personal initiative. I got to Salem Walton Business Award one year, and that's the only time, in fact, is I just did an interview for you, and I was named Mr. County with the three of the local papers. I don't know why they wanted the interview. They wanted a picture, and I told my assistant, send them a picture when I was in high school, maybe a little better in the paper.
Yeah.
But yeah, initiative. I've got a Sound Walton hat, said Walmart. I like Walmart, good stock. And I got a plaque. I got his book and so forth. And in his book, we talk about personal initiative. He visited his stores, you know, Sam did. And one of the stores, one of his supermarkets, there was some trash and stuff around the cash register. He told the manager, said, you need to clean that up. And he said, oh, we got a guy who'll come by in the afternoon and do that. Sam don't say a word. He goes back to the back. He asks one of the helpers for a broom and a dust mop. Sam comes out there and cleans up what needs to be done, which is initiative. A personal initiative is simply doing what needs to be done without thinking, well, that's how it's done. I'll be somebody else, or if we haven't let them do it. A personal initiative is simply seeing something that needs to be done. And Hill said that two type of people never succeed. One can only do what they're told, and others could even do what they're told. Neither one of them is going to succeed. And personal initiative just means if you come in, there's something in the floor that needs to be picked up. You don't say, well, we got a janitor who got, we got this, we got that. And it's, to me, it's so simple. I mean, if you're wanting to get ahead. A guy interviewed me, and he's a tremendous donor, and I won't mention his name because he's a private person, but he's worth an ungodly amount of money. And he hired me in 1975, and I worked in the finance business about probably 75 a week. I guess I was up to that because I started $1.15 an hour. He started a bank when he was 29 years old. Someone gave me my name. They told him he just opened a bank. He needed some people that knew the lending business and so forth. You couldn't just take in deposits if you're going to loan money. So he called me, and I was about an hour and 15 minutes away, managing the finance office. And he said, Don, I've started a new bank and said I need some help in lending. And he told me the man's name had recommended him. And he said, I'd love to interview if you'd have an interest. And I said, well, Jim, I always thought I'd end up in banking. I just never had the opportunity come to me. But I've tried to prepare myself by getting a degree in advanced degrees and studying finance and so forth. And he said, well, did you come over one day this week and interview? And I said, Jim, I could come on to serve your Sunday. You can't come through the week. I said, no, these people help pay my education. I said, I'm going places if I stayed with them. But I'm always looking for opportunities. So we raised, I came over, sorry. Here's what he said. He read the same books. His dad was a coal miner. He said, Don, you do a little extra one day. It probably won't matter. Do it for a week. Probably won't matter. But I promise you that if you'll work hard and all the people around you, one of these days, you're going to be the success most of the world only dreams about. And I won't tell you how much, but this guy's, I had lunch with him 2 weeks ago. This is a guy that can write $1 million checks. And I remember what he said. It was 49 years ago. It could have been 5 minutes ago. But I took that lesson. Of course, I was already practicing, I thought, because I was they called me hot shot for the attitude and the and help.
But I think one of the things, Don, is, and that's a great story, by the way. Thank you for telling that. That same individual has a definiteness of purpose. And there's always a purpose when you look at people that are setting goals. I remember Stephen Kotler being on here. Most CEOs or entrepreneurs, they're curious. And then after they're curious, they basically have defined a vision and a purpose and their values and their goals. Now, the goals come usually after someone has found that purpose. Why? The people always say, right? This is a statement that's been said so many times. The two greatest days in your life are the day you were born and the day you realize why you're here. And I think that goals that are actually achieved are in alignment with my values and the reason why I'm here, which is why Napoleon Hill talks about in this book, The Definiteness of Purpose. Speak with us if you would, because that is a driving force behind you, behind me. People ask me, they say, why do you still do this show? You've done 1,100 podcasts. You've been doing this 17 years and you never take a salary. And I say, because I have a nonprofit that helps the homeless and the Ukrainian refugees, and that's why I do it. And they're going, well, then that's your purpose. And I said, that's one of my purposes. Yes. So speak about that if you would.
Well, I think it's necessary. Even the Bible, I can't quote the verse, but the Bible says we must find our purpose. And if you'll know Rick Warren's book, last time I looked, it sold 45 million copies. It was a purpose-driven life.
Right.
And it was amazing how he sold his books. But we have to have something to get up. I said some people talk about purpose and talk about it. I talk about the four P's. Start off with purpose. And then, of course, if we have a purpose, what you want to do, you got to make some plans. They don't have to be good plans. You can always change the plans. He'll say that the main thing is having a purpose and getting started. You can always change your plans if they're not good. But the Bible tells us we're going to build a building. We must first sit down and figure a plan. We got to have a plan. And then I had to do it passion. Walter Chrysler said, nothing great was ever done without enthusiasm. We call it passion. And the last word is persistence. And if you'll follow those four P's and have a worthwhile purpose and draw up some plans, they know it'd be good plans. But if you have a passion of what you want to do and you have persistence, you're going to amaze a lot of people with what you can accomplish.
And I would agree with that persistence element, the last one. And I love the four P's, purpose, plan, and persistence. And what was the other one I missed?
Passion.
Passion. And, you know, they always talk about the bricklayers laying the building the church, right? You've heard that story a zillion times. And it's the bricklayers that say, I'm building the cathedral, that literally have the purpose behind them. They're not just laying the bricks, right? And I think many of my listeners have heard that story. But yet, put three different guys on a job, and if you got a guy who's just laying bricks for an hourly wage versus someone who can actually see the cathedral being built, and he's actually building a cathedral, then you got somebody who has a definite purpose. I do know, though, that, and I think some of our listeners, including you and me, we've gotten stuck sometimes. And I always like to address this because goal setting is a fundamental aspect of success. But what advice from somebody 83 years like yourself, who's been through it all, would you have for individuals who are struggling with setting their goals and achieving their goals effectively. What do you think might be getting in the way? Or do you believe that they have such an attachment to how it's supposed to turn out that they should really just accept what has actually happened? What would you say?
Well, I think even if you have to go back to childhood for development of purpose, grow up as a small kid, for example, and you love animals, and you start to thinking what you like to do and you love animals. Maybe a veterinarian will pop into your mind that you want to have a veterinarian, become a veterinarian or a dog grooming business or what have you. But I think if you stop and think, you can think something that you enjoy doing. I said, so many people hate their job, Greg. They look for Friday and they hate Mondays. Don't do it no more, Greg. You don't like what you're doing. We don't have slaves no more. Find something you want to do and quit complaining. Because when you start complaining, make excuses, you're just writing yourself a ticket to failure. You got to find something you enjoy. And I'll tell you how the purpose, I think it partly comes to you by having peace of mind. In other words, I have no animosity towards you. I don't have any jealousy, hatred, or whatever. All those negative things. We feed positive things into our mind. We'll get positive results. We have negative things feed in our subconscious. We can expect negative results. And I think it's pretty much that simple. And if we can do that. It all comes down to Zig Ziglar said, how bad do you want it? Because when we start making excuses, then we're in trouble. Because you can always make an excuse or a better excuse and why you're not accomplishing something. Well, for example, taxes are too high. They still have opportunities out there no more. Oh, no, no, none of them do you no good. You might as well go out for a 4% rocking chair all day. You may be comfortable, but it's not going to take you nowhere.
Well, speak about that, Zig Ziglar. I always remember him because I used to go to his talks. He would say, not your aptitude that determines your altitude, it's your attitude. And I think attitude is one of those things, because when people have a challenging attitude, persistence becomes very challenging for them to hold on to, because they'll say, oh, somebody else did it to me. Somebody else is to blame for this, whatever. As you and I know, nobody else is to blame for anything other than ourselves. And this comes down to your own self-study and your ability to learn this important. What would you tell somebody right now who's out there and is maybe given up? They aren't as persistent. That was one of your keys. And they're going through the pity party of woe is me. And they need an uplift. If they came into your office today and sat down right next to you, what would you say to somebody like that?
Well, I can give them a good example. I was up in Pennsylvania, if you remember, Charlie Tremendous Jones, and Greg Reed was at that, and he asked me to help Greg do a book and get him some recognition. And I started a story from R.U. Darby on 3 Feet from Goal. On persistence, and got with Greg, and we never really got it complete. And Sharon Lecter would have been more to work with us. And I said, Sharon, why don't we just do this thing together? And I said, I don't have time for the interviews. All we got started on the thing, and it was, of course, 3 Feet from Goal. The man quit, and it's 3 Feet from Goal. But if we quit and we don't stick with something or another, then we never know how close we are. Anybody just more. The people that's persistent is the ones that has results. You can always quit and say, well, Greg told me I shouldn't have tried that. I didn't have the right education. I didn't know nobody, or other my spouse told me whatever. But and Napoleon would say, don't tell them, show them. And again, it comes down to what really want it. You can't jump from one thing to another and then put a little bit of effort. Well, I didn't want like that and go to something else. If you read Steve Jobs' autobiography, there was a guy, Walter Ackerson, I don't know how you pronounce his name. but he wrote the books he considered the geniuses of our time. One of them was Leonardo da Vinci, one of them was Ben Franklin, one was Einstein, and the fourth one was Steve Jobs. And in fact, as he said, Steve Jobs said, "Don't you think you ought to look a book on me?" And Walter told him, "Well, maybe you're a little older." Then 6 months later, he found Steve Jobs, founder of Apple, had a pancreatic cancer, and he called him. But he said of all the qualities he had, the one he put the most emphasis on was persistence. Once he had an idea that he wanted to do, he persisted. He may have to get Greg, he may have to get all kinds of people, bankers or whatever, you wanted to put the thing together. But the main thing was he stuck with it, and that separates.
I think the most important thing is they don't quit. You know, I've been noted by my wife that when something has to get done, this is a simple, small example, around the house, you know, I will continue to persist until I figure it out, or if it's a computer problem or whatever it might be. And I think not giving up and succeeding at overcoming a challenge is really, really important. And I think there's some people out there listening that may have encountered fear or self-doubt and in their journey toward success. How would you talk to those individuals to help them overcome the obstacles and to maintain the confidence that they need and their abilities to succeed? Because in essence, if there's anything that gets in the way of our success, it's our own stinking thinking. It's our own mental attitude. We can overcome a lot of things as human souls on this planet, and with the help of God and with the help of a higher spirit and understanding that we're being guided along the way. But you got to have a belief in something greater than yourself. No man is an island, right, Don?
Oh, absolutely. You have to develop a belief in yourself because what I learned a long time ago, when things didn't work out right, I took them as a lesson. Well, I can try it again. And I'll tell you one. In baking days, I attended all the art and so forth. And I was always interested in art, and I love art. Can't draw a straight line, but I collected art. And some good stuff. I went to the guy's auction that wrote the book Roots, and accepted. I mean, that was a pretty good draw to pick up some of the other that I'd see that I was interested in and whatever. And sometimes things didn't turn out right. And one in particular, it was a company, Sloan and Kenyon's. I had a friend who was in World War II, and he wasn't named CIA, what they called it then. But he worked for Harry Winston, the jeweler, big jeweler out of New York City. And I collected some Russian arts by this guy, Eugene Kumanov. He did the screen set for War and Peace, and pretty famous in Russia. I met his stepson through the University of Virginia, where I've been on the board 20-some-odd years. And he told me about his stepfather being an artist. And I said, "Well, that's interesting." We exchanged some messages. Anyway, I started buying his paintings at reasonable, sent them to DHL, crate them up nice. I sold some, kept some, still got some. One hangs in the chancellor's office. But Bill, my friend, said, "Your old time seller art, once you send him, he's going to be in Bethesda, Maryland, coming up in a few months." And I did. And we went up there. I mean, it was wine and cheese and social gathering and all this. And I got about 10 Russian paintings in the catalog. And I'm sitting there, I'm going to make big money. I don't need the money. I just love the process. Well, guess what, Greg? Some of them things sold for less than what I had in them. And I thought, "Don, you thought you're smart, didn't you?" I didn't quit doing art. What I should have done is I should have said, "If this thing piece don't break $10,000, you ship it back to me." I did put a minimum in the contract I signed with them. I signed the contract to pay them 15% and so forth. But I didn't, I didn't use a larder or nothing like that. But I'd sold to Sotheby's and other places. I never needed nothing like that because I'd always done well. And so I didn't quit doing the art. I just made it sure next time I sent some other off, I determined what the least amount I'd take for it. And I put that in the contract for ship to pay. So, I just considered the lesson learned. And just laugh it off. I mean, if you let someone don't turn out right. You got to look at it. I said, why learn something from man? You know, it's like if you learn from yourself, you learn from others. So I put my hand on a hot stove and get burnt. I'm not going to do it no more. I see Greg put his hand on a hot stove and get burnt. I don't have to repeat it. We can learn from our own things that don't turn out. We learn from others because
Jim
Rowan. Jim Rowan said, now he said, in the Bible, they got these stories. And you know, I love hearing him talk. He said, I listened to him a long, long time ago. He said, they got these stories. He said, look how this guy did it. He said, they got stories there, do it like this guy did. And he said, then they got stories there, don't do like this guy did. And in other words, people got in trouble. He said, now what I'm telling you is, if they write about you in a book, make sure you're the good example, not the bad example.
Right. And I totally agree with that. And, you know, you're someone that along the way, you know, which is why I believe you're so successful as you are, is you're a master at building relationships. And one of the things that Hill emphasizes in this book is collaboration and building meaningful relationships that's emphasized. How could the listeners leverage this power of collaboration to accelerate their progress toward their goals? Because I will tell you, for me, I've been doing this show 18 years, and like I said, 1,100 podcasts, and it's all about relationships. I am someone who builds relationships with hopefully everybody I meet. Hopefully they like me as much as I like them. But the point is that you can't get anywhere unless the people, well, you like people and people like you. What would you tell our listeners out there who have or are challenged by figuring out how to collaborate? Because the world today isn't about competition. It's about collaboration. And if you don't learn how to collaborate, you're going to be broke.
Well, Greg, I did an interview with a newspaper just a few 30 minutes before I started this with you. And I jotted myself a note to the guy's first name was Kenneth. And I made a note before I leave here to implement maybe two books. And also is in my phone contacts in the notes section of people I brought across or whatever, I'll put a note in there so I know what book I sent them so I don't repeat the thing. But when we have a chance to do somebody a favor and don't do it, we the one gets cheated. We're cheating ourselves. And right. we never know where it amounts to. I mean, I can tell you story for story for story for story. I got one I'm looking to guy's picture for getting an award from the president of Nigeria. He called me years ago and wanted to talk, and I had someone with me, and I told my assistant, give him my cell phone because I'm leaving in a few minutes. And he called me. He said, Mr. Don, can you listen to my story? He's still calling me Mr. Don. I said, sure, Polly. And he said he's in Nigeria, 14 years old, on the streets, got hold of $5, bought some new sandals, resold them, and then didn't spend the money, resold them, bought used clothes, sold them, then went to Hong Kong, bought men's suits, sold. Someone recognized him and offered him to sell drugs. And he told me his story, and I said, that's impressive. And he said he read Success So Positive Male Attitude by W. Clement Solon, Napoleon Hill, published in 1960. And I said, yeah. I said, Mr. Stone wrote a couple of his own books. I didn't know that. And he said, Mr. Don. I said, yeah, he wrote Believe and Achieve, Success Has Never Failed. I said, you've talked to Anita on the phone. Send her your email, your address, by email to her, and I go in. I'll send you them two books. And I did it. I don't know why much, $7,500, I guess, FedEx to Nigeria. It 2 or 3 weeks went by. And he called. He said, Don, Mr. Don, I've been in every communist country, North Vietnam, North Korea, selling malaria drugs. He said, and I got back them two books. You said you was going to send two books to me. He said, they was there. I said, Polly, my mother told me, if you tell somebody you want to do something, you be sure you do it. I told right. you. He said, I want to wire you some money. I said, Polly, we're a nonprofit, but now we will accept your money. He said, I'm going to wire you $100,000. He wired me $100,000. And when I got the money, I had his cell phone number. Then I called him, thanked him. And I said, Polly, you love Napoleon Hill so good. You ever come to the United States? I said, we're not where he's born. I got all his archives, his books, and so. Oh, yeah. He said, my daughter lives in Maryland. I come visit her.
Yeah.
I said, well, you come visit me, but just let me know when you're coming, so I'll be sure to be there. He said, I will. And when I come, I'll bring you $150,000. I'll make $250,000.
Wow, what a great story.
I never expected nothing from it, but there's been other instances also that I won't tell for privacy.
Well, your foundation is definitely worthy of the donation, that's for certain. And I want to let my listeners know, just go to Napoleon Hill and you can learn more about the foundation and the good work that Don Green's doing. Now, one of the concepts that's talked about in this book and almost every book that Napoleon Hill has is this concept of masterminding. It's kind of central to Napoleon Hill's teachings. And, you know, when I was growing up and in the selling business, it was prevalent. Everybody was starting masterminds. I don't see as much of it today, unfortunately. I see it in different ways. There's BNI and all these other kind of organizations where people kind of try to do what Napoleon did. How can individuals create and benefit from their own mastermind groups to support their personal and professional growth? Because there couldn't be anything better than masterminding. Agreed?
I agree. He learned that from R.D. Carnegie, Andrew Carnegie. Andrew Carnegie, as you know, is a 12-year-old, comes over here, he's from Scotland. His 12-year-old, he went to work for $1.10 a week in a textile place. But Colonel Edwards gave the boys books to read. But he did. He had this idea of buying up the steel mills and consolidating them. Of course, they thought he would buy them up and raise the prices. I think he cut the price about 90% or something. But he had not steel. He did go to England and study it. But he accumulated all these other people. He got what he thought was the best chemists and accountants and lawyers and so forth. And he said his only job was to maintain harmony in the group, in other words. And in fact, as a chemist who was from France, he couldn't get along with other people. And he was a high-priced chemist. He let him go. He did not disband his mastermind group. He got someone to replace him. But each one of them contributed. And, of course, as I tell people, if you use Napoleon Hill as definition of mastermind, it's not a bunch of guys sitting around drinking beer and eating pizza telling how great they are. It's a group of working in harmony for a common cause, in other words, like the U.S. Steel, or to start a nonprofit to help the homeless like you've done or whatever. So there's certain rules about it if you use his thing, but nothing great was ever achieved by one person without help. For example, I'd like to use Van Gogh because he died at age 39, I think, by suicide. So one painting, I think, to a brother-in-law, and he had nobody marketing for him. All he'd done was paint. And when he died, his art's worth millions of dollars today. But
yeah,
what he liked, if he'd had a good old guy out there like Greg on our marketing that stuff for him, he'd been living in luxury and what have you, but he never got that. He was so concentrating on what he was doing. But there's more to it in painting, just like there's more to a successful book, and they're just writing it. You got to have somebody to market it and promote the thing, whatever. So
it was interesting you say that, because I was just on with a young woman who wrote a book through Wiley, and Wiley published it. But at the same time, she said, well, I'm not getting much support from Wiley, and this isn't a downplay here. This is just the reality of life when you write a book a lot of times. And she said, the process wasn't bad, but I don't understand why it's not selling. And I said, because you've got to get out there and promote it. And if Wiley's not helping you do it, you got to do it yourself. So, you know, being on my podcast is going to help, but you got to be on a lot of podcasts and talk to a lot of people to sell a lot of books. And that brings me to a point in this interview, Don, where I want to talk about the importance of continuous learning. I think that when you can help somebody, look, I gave her a bunch of tips and I said, you might want to try this, you might want to try that, you might want to try this. She was taking notes, like furiously. She goes, wow, I wish I'd met you before because you're giving me such great ideas to market my book. And I said, well, I've been doing this 17 years. Maybe I know a little bit about marketing a book. And I want to talk about this self-improvement. What are some practical ways our listeners can invest in their personal development journey and / helping them achieve their goals? What would you tell them? You just told me at the beginning of the show, you read 4 books a week. All right. I told you I was going to send you a book. There's somebody really dedicated to their personal growth and development if they're reading 4 books a week.
Well, hey, in addition to the writing, my social media girl, when I came back once one day, she had hung a nice art sign about the size of this TV screen, and it said, there are 2 ways to learn. Books and being around smarter people, Don Gurry. I said, Lana, why did you put that up for? She said, you've told me that 1,000 times. I said, well, if it's a 3rd way to learn, you find out what it is, would you let me in on it? I found it out. So, and I think that's it because, you know, if you read a good book and you only get 1/7 out of it, then I read one. I said, where was that? Now, anyhow, I wrote it down. And it said, success is not the key to happiness. Happiness is the key to success.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah. That is most definitely true.
Self-accumulated stuff, and I'm going to be happy. No, if you're happy in your circumstances, then you'll be successful.
Yes. Well, you have a lot of wisdom to give a lot of people in your 83 years of being on this planet, and congratulations for that. You just had a birthday March 1st, so I want to acknowledge you on that. And as we wrap up this interview, what final words of wisdom or encouragement would you like to share with the audience who's out there listening today? And by the way, we've gone back and forth, but we've included some of the content from The Millionaire Mindset and some of the content from Achieving Goals, but you can get these books off Amazon. We're going to have links to both of them. Don Green himself is on this one, right at the bottom. And this one, well, I guess this is just Napoleon Hill. But Don, what would you want to tell people as we kind of wrap this up about reading, studying, self-development, achieving goals, masterminding, definition of purpose? How would you kind of put a whole ribbon around that and give them some kind of encouragement as we sum up our podcast?
Well, I had the reading is the starting point. I think I was coming out of the post office one day and a friend said, Don, you got a new book out? Yeah, I might have one in the car. I said, let me check. I used the curse from the car. A lady was sitting there, which I did not know. I mean, I knew her face, but her name, and she wasn't part of the conversation. She said, well, I agree. I just don't have time. I said, you don't have 24 hours a day. I said, I don't really mean to you, but we all do what we want to. I said, I developed a cable TV company one time. And you know, two things I saw. One is I saw a financial statement of a large cable company, and all their money they staking in was going out for borrowed money at the bank and to keep buying up the competitors, to raise the price and buy the competitor, buy the price by our competitors. I said, heck, boys, we just start this one and we'll put some money in, build it. We'll let the money profit grow the thing rather than go borrowed money. But I said part of my study was average person in the United States, they claim watches TV 7 hours a day. Don't tell me you don't have time to read. We do what we want to do. We take time to eat. We take time to take a shower and other things. Basically, we do what we want to do. But I would say it was to develop a good reading habits. I've been around. I can name a few billionaires who are friends. Guess what? They're everyone average readers. And I went in homes when I was in the finance business making $1.15 an hour. People did not have books. Now, were they poor because they didn't have books? Which one was it? You know, but I mean, I had one lady tell me one time, she said, oh, Mr. Green, we're so hard up. We barely got money to buy our cigarettes or coffee. Yeah, we're going to buy our cigarettes. We ain't going to waste no money on no books.
I like that one. We're spending more money on cigarettes than we are on books. And it's like you say, it's where you make a choice to do what you do with your time. I remember this saying, if a camera followed you around all day long, a video, and took the video, would you like what was replayed back again? And if there's no alignment to your values, what do you stand for? What are you out there wanting to do or achieve, your goal? And what do you want to change in the world that you don't like about what's going on right now? And there's plenty out there that all of us have to choose from the politics in our country, to the sustainability, to our environmental issues, to all the other kind of things we could get involved in. But the reality is we have plenty of choices of where we could spend time to make a difference. And I appreciate you, because the foundation itself makes a difference just by you as a director making the connection with people, just like the stories you just told. You sent the guy a couple of books. He sent you $100,000. Then he said, I'm going to come back. And he brings another $150,000 for you. And I'm sure you have many of those stories. But for everybody out there listening, just listen to what Don did. You see, I'm just going to show them. There's three little labels here that I printed. And I owe people books. When I promise people books, I don't always get them out the same day. I actually put these labels on and I carry them to the post office myself. And people are like, you do that yourself? And I go, yeah, I do. That's what I do. I sign the books just like Don signed them to me. And I take them to the post office. Right, Don?
Yes, absolutely. My member Mark Twain says, people don't read, they're open, all the people can read.
Yeah, that's good.
And it says it pretty well. Because, I mean, why would you not take advantage of this of millions of people out there that's produced stuff that's valuable to us? No matter if we're studying gardening or my daughter she's a CPA, but she became a pretty well-known interior decorator just from the love of doing it as a hobby. And started studying the books and taking the courses and what have you, because when people come to our home and say, Donna, who designed your place? I did. Where would you do something for me? And so she prints up her cards and she told her mother asked her how much she charged. She said, well, I charge based on the material, I charge based on my time. Donna's sure in your gods, you don't charge that kind of money. She said, Mom, if you don't charge a lot, people think you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, she's right. She's your daughter's very smart. Well, I will tell you, sitting above you on your left there is a gentleman who started Combined Insurance, W. Clement Stone. And I see the picture of him because I can recognize him even through this camera that far away. And he was one of my kind of mentors. And when I was early listening to the recordings, who were the guys that started? Well, it wasn't Norman Vincent Peale, because I listened to Norman Vincent Peale a ton. But Clement Stone got involved, and they did the, who is it that I'm thinking of, Don? All the audio cassettes that used to, huh?
Got to go, Carney, with Og Mandino. He heard Og Mandino used to work for him when he
was growing up. I'm trying to think of it. The father and then the son took it over, and I apologize, listeners, but I'll
you're talking about
Nightingale Conell. That's what it was. There you go. Yeah, Earl Nightingale.
Yeah, we probably have 30 or 40 audios with them. I talked to Vic the other day. He called me. Yeah, good guy.
Very good guy. As a matter of fact, you bring something up, I need to go check that out. Nightingale Conell, for all of you people who haven't, I'm sure the website's still up there. And there are some masterpieces from Nightingale Conell, just like there are from Napoleon Hill Foundation. All of this stuff, you may say, well, this is old, old, old. No, this is timeless. Everything that's written here is timeless. And you'll find whether it's the definiteness of purpose or the mastermind groups or how to achieve goals, building relationships, all of that, you couldn't go to a better resource than Napoleon Hill Foundation. So, Don, I appreciate you being back on again, talking about achieving your goals. And also, we didn't speak a lot about it, but the millionaire mindset, but in essence, we did, because both of them work together. But you're always an honor and a great person to have on the show. And I'm glad we got this time to talk about these two books. And for my listeners, we'll put links to Napoleon Hill. We'll put links to these books. You can check out all the other books as well. Don, thanks for being on Inside Personal Growth. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on Inside Personal Growth. We appreciate your support. And for more information about new podcasts, please go to insidepersonalgrowth.com or any of your favorite channels to listen to our podcast.